Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 283, and I am pleased to have on Jory Collins, the head women's basketball coach at North Dakota State University up in... it's Fargo, right? Yeah, Fargo. Yes, my aunt and cousins live across the river in Moorhead, so somewhat familiar with the tundra of the Upper Dakotas there. So, really pleased to have Coach Collins on the podcast here this week. Before we get to Coach formally here, though, we of course want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, and you're in the Omaha area, go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice at cosacchiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, download, rate, review. If you're on iTunes, if you're on Spotify, whatever it may be, obviously subscribe. That's the best thing you can do is subscribe. Give us a 5-star review so that we can have as many coaches as we can to educate themselves and move up the rankings here. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. It's a really good coaching website for any coach who wants to hone their craft. I know that because I'm the one that put it together and I think it's pretty good. So, but I'm a little selfish in that regard. Enough of that stuff. Let's get to the real meat and potatoes of the day here today. Jory Collins, head women's basketball coach at North Dakota State University. Coach, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Happy to be here, Marty. I appreciate you having me.
Awesome. Well, Coach, let's get into it, the way that we normally start here. For people who are unfamiliar with your coaching journey, tell us a little bit about your basketball background and your coaching journey and how you ended up at North Dakota State University.
Yeah, so, geez, we're going to have to go back a ways.
That's okay. You know, now, To be clear, Coach, we don't use the O word on a pen and a napkin. We say seasoned and experienced. So,
gotcha.
Yep. So
I'll give you the seasoned and experienced version.
There we go.
You know, I grew up playing basketball with my closest friend in a small town in Kansas, and that's just what we did every day. They had a nice little cement patio that had a hoop on it, and we played from elementary school all the way through high school. Sometimes with the car lights on, you know, at 1 or 2 in the morning, somebody'd start talking trash and then some one-on-one would break out. And that's how I just honed some competitiveness, you know, in high school and obviously playing for my high school team. I didn't end up playing in college. I ended up enrolling at Emporia State to be a teacher, and I wanted to be a high school coach. I had some great high school coaches at Holton High School in Holton, Kansas, football coaches, basketball coaches that I really respected. And I thought they had a pretty good gig. I saw them playing out at the 9-hole golf course all summer long and then, you know, coaching their butts off during the school year. And they always had a smile on their face. I was like, all right, these guys got it pretty good. Maybe I'll just teach elementary school and try to get a good high school coaching job. I got into Emporia State, and it just so happened that their women's basketball team, this was about 1999, was just coming off maybe two or three of the best years they've ever had. Cindy Stein was the coach at the time.
Yep.
Who went on to be the coach at Missouri and then Southern Illinois and a couple other stops. But she had a young assistant named Brandon Schneider then. And I remember I was going to school there, so I remember them making the Elite Eight or whatever and how exciting it was on campus and some of that stuff. And the next year, I went in. Cindy had moved on to Missouri, and Brandon had taken the head coaching job. And I wasn't playing, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to be a high school head coach at some point, I need some more experience. So I went in and just asked if I could, you know, be a practice guy, if I could help out, what could I do? And he was gracious enough to allow me to be part of the team. And so for my undergrad at Emporia State, I was basically a practice player.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come every day and do the best I could and practice hard. And I couldn't have, that was my first experience with women's basketball, Marty,
mm-hmm.
really at any kind of high level. And I was blown away by how tough, how athletic, how competitive those young ladies were. And I couldn't have been more impressed. I was like, oh yeah, I got to play today. I got to lace them up tight, and be ready to go. And then just, Brandon, I think he was 26 when he got the head coaching job. So young guy, he was pretty brash. He was pretty confident, pretty cocky, pretty loud. He coached them really hard, and they just took it and were really, really good, Marty. And I, it was just an environment where I was just blown away by, and Brandon gave me more and more responsibility every year. I did teach fifth grade for 1 year, as I got married. And then I came back immediately and was the graduate assistant for a couple years. And then I was able to be the full-time assistant at Emporia State. And then in 2010, we won the, Division II national championship, and he moved on to Stephen F. Austin, and I was able to stay there and become the head coach. So, it was a little different path, being a student assistant and then graduate assistant and then full-time assistant. But I was fairly prepared for the head coaching job just because I've, had just about every job in the program. I'd been around for 9, 10 years. I'd recruited those players that were there when I took over as the head coach. So there was a lot of things that had to fall into place for me, and just getting the opportunity there, was awesome. And my wife and I both went to school there. We lived in Emporia for 20 years, between going to school and coaching. So it really is like a home to us. After the 8th year, Brandon had asked me before, and I stayed in Emporia, but after the 8th year, he asked me to come to Kansas. And at that point, it was a little just too good probably for me to pass up. I grew up in Kansas. I was a Danny and the Miracles, 1988 Jayhawks.
Milton Newton.
Anybody watch? I watched that Oklahoma KU game maybe 150 times on a VHS tape until it wore out. So, to get the chance to, and then Roy Williams and all that as I was growing up was big time basketball in my eyes, and didn't miss a game on TV. To get a chance to go coach at Allen Fieldhouse and just be there was something I thought I would regret if I didn't take the opportunity. Went there and loved it. Planned on being there at least 3 years until I was going to look for another head coaching job. But North Dakota State came calling in the spring after that first year. And there were too many things about this job, Marty, that I couldn't pass up. The women's basketball program at the time wasn't in a great spot, but every other program, at the university was really good. And I know everybody knows football and the national championships, but track is winning conference championships over and over again. Softball's been dominant at times. So I'm like, okay, they're able to do that in a lot of sports. There must be a really good foundation in the athletic department. And long story short, like I came and visited and didn't see any of the red flags that would keep me. It was also an opportunity to start from scratch, really with the program, which was a little bit unique and different challenge. And so I ran with it.
It's kind of interesting you said that about playing and being a student assistant. That's where you started at. I mean, I feel those vibes exactly. I was the same way at Briarcliff. Mike asked me to be a student assistant. The most amazing thing that I found, Coach, was some of those, and I'm going to use air quotes here, college habits that you pick up at night. When I was practicing every day, I was able to do that and maintain the same weight. But as soon as I quit practicing every day, for some reason, I put on a little bit more weight than I should have, and I can't figure out why to this day, for any reason why that happened. But no, you hit me in the feels with that, because that's exactly how I started. And when one of our newest categories here to the pod, Coach, the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Jory, when was From your recollection, when was the first time you took pen to paper or pen to napkin and started drawing out those pesky X's and O's that we all love to do?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been without question during my when I was a student assistant.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you know, that's where, you know, I wasn't in film all the time. You know, at that point, I was walking into practice and doing some of those things. But we would watch enough film in the gym, you know, right before practice. And I would watch film on, hey, who are we? Who am I supposed to be today? And some of those things. And it's really amazing how much basketball you pick up, not just doing what your team's doing, but preparing, you know, for other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And styles of play and philosophies. And, you know, there's things there where I kind of just started putting things together that I liked. Or, you know, I would get into practice and be like, man, we run this and I'm guarding it and this is really hard to guard. Mm-hmm. Like, this is making me make a decision. Am I going to help here? Am I going to close out here? How am I going to get over this screen? So, you know, I'd be like, hey, that's good action because it's causing me to think. And that means there's got to be communication. And so probably just, yeah, even when I was an undergrad and just practicing every day, I know that I had a notebook going that first year.
Yeah. Yep. You kind of talked about it a little bit here, Coach, with your move up the ladder, and you know, you do this job long enough, and especially if you have some success, you do think about the next stop. And obviously, like I say, you spent a lot of time in Emporia, 20 plus years. It was going to have to be a heck of a deal for you to move on from Emporia, and then from a Division I power four or five or however many powers there are these days to a head coaching job. And you outlined a little bit there what you had, but what were some of the qualities as you kind of put your list together, especially let's say when you went from KU to North Dakota State? What were some of the things that you were looking for that had to be in place for you to even consider that position to move on from a place that I would assume that you're really, really happy and content with?
Yeah, well, that's a easy question for me, Marty. When you know, if you go back and look, I think Emporia State won more games from 2000 to 2020 than any other Division I school by a pretty decent margin. We were really successful. We had 2,200 fans a game at a 30,000, you know, population community there. Women's basketball was important. When they got it rolling in the late 90s, it just was an unbelievable, it was his own thing.
Yep.
And it was awesome.
Yep.
And so obviously going to Kansas, that was obviously, you know, a chance to be at the big time and see what that was like. And one thing I learned there was the game is no different than it was at Emporia State. Athletes are a little bit bigger, a little bit faster, stronger, but the game is the same.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about North Dakota State that really, really intrigued me was how they had already been good in women's basketball.
Yeah.
You know, when they were Division II in the 90s.
Perennial power.
And that's a little bit of what really intrigued me is they were just kind of ending their run in the late 90s as Emporia State was starting to get really good. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of crossover there at the Elite Eight, both there at the same time the year before I started.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would look who's in the top of the polls and all that stuff, and you would see their name there. Obviously they made the transition to Division I, you know, there in the mid 2000s. And,
yep.
I think they would have told you that women's basketball would have been the easiest transition sport just because they were so successful in it.
Yeah.
And I think they expected to be really good right away. And, you know, I think it was tough the first year or two, just, you know, talking with Coach Rooley here about, you know, the travel they had to do, not really being in the league the first year. And, you know, she'd been doing it for so long. She just felt like it was time. But I was mostly excited that, hey, there's a fan base here that had seen high quality women's basketball that at one point were just super, super passionate about it. We had a great alumni group. You know, Jamie Adams is on our staff. But Jamie Green at the time is in the Hall of Fame and it was part of that kind of era. And there's 30 to 40 of those women now that are about my age that were just in here at a time where it was a dominant thing. And it was important here too. I mean, UND was really good also, obviously.
Yep.
So that rivalry, I think, just fueled, you know, such a passion for women's basketball that I wanted to make sure if I was going somewhere, I was going to go somewhere where women's basketball was important.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of places in the country where football and men's basketball, you know, rule the roost, and that's their priorities. And as long as women's basketball isn't embarrassing and they're just, you know, keeping their head above water, that's fine.
Yep.
And we'll try to make our money in those other two sports. And it was made pretty clear to me that they were very, very passionate about getting NDSU women's basketball back to contending for championships. And that's exactly what I was hoping for.
It's like you're looking over my shoulder, Coach. You obviously have a place where tradition is important, and for a lot of coaches in a lot of places, sometimes they don't feel like they're supported as much as they could be or should be by their administrators. You just recently signed an extension, nice 5-year extension. You're going to still be in Fargo for quite a while here. How much easier does it make it for you to have that supportive administration? And what do you feel like are some things that you've done to garner that support, other than obvious things like winning games, which we'll get to here in a little bit? But what have you done to make that relationship as strong as you can with your administration?
Yeah, I mean, for me, in you have to build trust, Marty, and that means, you know, when I tell you when you interview me and I tell you this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and if you accept that and you hire me, then I will do everything in my power to do that job the way I said that I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just over the course of time, you know, I'm a pretty straightforward person. I'm pretty blunt on, hey, this is what we need to be successful. This is stuff we have. We don't need this. Here's what I think is important in our league now. Here's how we're going to be able to compete. And we have a terrific fan base here that's very, very supportive. We have terrific administration, Marty, that understands that and does, you know, whatever in their power to let us get what we think we need to be successful. Now, you know this as well as I do. You could ask for the world, and most of the time you're going to be like, hey, we can't do that.
Yeah.
But you can always ask, and you can always put it out there. This is what, you know, these are the next steps our program needs to take to be able to do the things we think it are necessary to be at the top of the league. And we're very well supported here. Our players have a really good experience. But having that trust with the administration of, hey, this is what we need, and then they give it to you, and then they can see that it makes a difference, you know, makes it easier, you know, the next time.
I've always said when you ask for that stuff from the administration, it's kind of like asking a girl out in high school or whatever, when you're trying to date somebody, what's the worst they could say? No. Well, okay. And then they say, no. Yeah. So, and then trust me, in both my coaching career and in my dating career, I was told no a heck of a lot more than I was told yes. So
they join the club. that's about all recruiting is anymore. You get told no way more than you get told yes.
Mm-hmm.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slicus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the Last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Coach, let's talk a little bit about the program itself and what you've done. Like we had talked about just a few minutes ago, you came to a place where, especially when they were a Division II program, NDSU was a tremendous power, winning, playing for and winning national championships. Program fell off over the last 5 or 6 years since you've been there. You've built the program back up. The obvious thing, of course, is you get better players. And that obviously makes sense. But there are other things that you're looking to do to rebuild a program to get it back to where you want it to be. So what do you think are some things that you and your staff have done well over the last 5 or 6 years to take the program from where it was struggling for about a decade or so to where now you're competing at the top of the Summit League?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy thing, easy to say, hard to do, Marty, was really just, it was a mentality and expectation. What are the expectations, you know, when we got here? What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? And then are we putting our best foot forward every day to make that happen? You know, when I got here, the expectation was, you know, we're not very good. We don't expect to win games. We don't expect to be competitive. And when that's your mindset, you know, you don't give yourself much of a chance. You know, our very first year, we started 0-7. And I don't think I ever lost three games in a row at Emporia State. And, you know, I thought I was going to die. You asked my wife, you know, what it was like in that 0-7 stretch to start the year. And it was hard for me. But eventually, I think we finished the year going 11-12. And so we got to some 500 basketball, at least through league play, where, you know, you could see our players' mentalities change a little bit. Like, hey, you know, if we do things the right way, we have a chance. And eventually we expect to win. And so I think just changing the mindset and the mentality of the people in your locker room, was, you know, the first and foremost thing we had to do, besides obviously recruiting talented players that carry out, you know, a plan and execute and do those things. But, you know, the mindset I think was the big thing. And I think that was, you know, that was my belief. I've been a head coach before. We've had some success before. You know, Coach Dillon has been with me. He was a practice player for me at Emporia State, been with me all along here. He knew what it was supposed to look like and believed in what we were doing. And it's really just a transfer of belief, you know, from us to players until they all believe it just the same. That's what I would tell you was the main probably thing.
And even during that 0-7 stretch, those, you know, basically that first two and a half months, it just had to be, I'm guessing, a daily message of here's the standards, here's the expectations, here's the things that we are going to do and how we're going to do them here, because I know this will bring about success. Was that a lot of it, Coach?
Yeah, you're spot on. And I think the girls, like, you know, I was mad. And, you know, they're like, why is it, you know, God, he's, we'll, you know, this isn't different for us. We haven't been winning. This is what we're used to. And he's mad we're not. You know, maybe he does think we could be better than we are. And, you know, when that was unacceptable, you know, I think they started expecting a little more out of themselves, and got closer to playing to what their potential was with that first group. And, you know, and I've said this multiple times, that first year we got here, we had some awesome kids. They had some kids depart. When I met with the players coming in, you know, Emily Dietz was a young player there, ended up playing with us her last 3 years for us and two with the previous coaching staff, but a tremendous leader and believer in people and could bring people together. And she told me when I was on my visit, like, hey, the people we have in the locker room now are people that like each other and they'll do anything you say right now. And that was, it was tremendous to have a group that year that, while maybe not talented enough, if you're just going to put it out there, you know, maybe not quite at the level of good mid-major basketball, they were tremendous workers, tremendous people, tremendous teammates. And I think that's what allowed us to get out of, hey, we're 0-7, but that's not who we're going to be all year long. And eventually play some pretty good basketball, you know, for some stretches that first year.
Mm-hmm. When you were going through that stretch and you said, you know, you're getting angry and you were getting frustrated with the losing, I'm just kind of curious. I want to go down this rabbit hole a little bit with you, Jory. Was it probably, my guess is it wasn't about the losing. It was about how you were losing. Am I right with that? You know, just here's the details. Here's what we need to do. Why aren't you diving on the floor for this loose ball? Or you've got to know the scouting report better than this if you want success. I'm guessing those are the conversations that were had.
100%. So, you know, we just hadn't been together long enough to have all those habits,
mm-hmm.
You know, just totally built in. You know, you work on it all summer, all fall, and then you get to a game and people revert back to what they've done the most.
Yep.
And we just hadn't been there long enough to change habits yet. And I'm as competitive as anybody out there, Marty, but I am okay. I can sleep good at night when we don't win a game, as long as we've put our best foot forward. If somebody just beats you, they beat you.
Yep.
You know, they're also really talented and great coaches out there. Mm-hmm. You know, the only time that I'm ever, you know, disappointed is when we're not able to go out and, for most of the time, do the things that we've practiced leading in and up to the game. And that was it. It was just, hey, you know, in this situation, and man, some of those games were close. I mean, I think one or two of them were overtime games. You know, we got our butts kicked a couple times, against Iowa State and somebody else, which you might expect.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always 3, 4, or 5 possessions, where we just didn't know yet, hey, how to finish a game, how to handle a situation, cause we just hadn't been together long enough. But again, like I said, as we were able to watch film, as we were able to keep talking, because of the quality of kids that we had, they got to figure it out pretty quick.
Yep. As you climb up the Summit League standings and you keep moving up here, every year's a little bit better than the last, you still have that, you know, 600-pound gorilla that's you're looking straight up at, and that is, of course, South Dakota State. I can't even remember the last time that they've lost a league game, whether that's regular season or tournament. You could probably tell me the answer. I'm sure you probably know, but
They haven't the last three years.
Yeah. So obviously a terrific program. They've been to the NCAA tournament and won a game a couple of years ago against USC. So as you try to break through, is part of the next step is, okay, we just need to get ourselves back to respectable. Then we need to get ourselves to good. Now, what do we need to do to get past those guys about 3.5 hours south of us down there in Brookings, South Dakota? How do you frame that for your program to hopefully get that, you know, what the ultimate goal is to get into the NCAA tournament?
Yeah. Well, one, I respect the heck out of AJ and his program, and they do. I mean, they're classy. They're really good. They do everything the right way. And they're just, you know, that's who's in front of you.
Yeah.
I knew that when I took this job, you know, Don being at USD, I knew it was those two at the top. And you know, if I wouldn't have taken this job if I didn't think we could be right in that mix.
Yep.
You know, at some point. And I would always tell you, we're not going to sit around and wait for them to get worse. It's our responsibility to continue to grow and get better.
Yep.
And this happened at Emporia. You know, we for a few years at Emporia State were super dominant. And then all of a sudden, everybody else kind of had a, hey, if we don't want this to happen every year, we're going to have to invest more. We're going to have to, you know, invest more in our women's program so that we're not getting embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have that. We've continued to recruit better and better players. Our recruiting classes, I feel like, have improved every single year. Now it's our job to keep those kids and make sure that we have them when they're juniors and seniors so that we have a chance to go win those really big ball games down in Brookings or here against them or in the conference tournament. So I think just quality players with quality experience is what's going to give you the best chance. And we haven't really had that, at least to the level that they've had it in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I would tell you just, you know, as much as people ask me, I don't really sit around and think about what SDSU is doing very much. It's our job to get as good as we can. You know, high tide raises all boats.
Yep.
And they're the high tide, and it's our job to be another boat that gets that high too.
Yep. Coaching today is, let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about, but it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level, and you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level. It's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops. A one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you gotta know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about. Zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development. Personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it for 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from a pen and a napkin. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How does that sound?
I love it. Share a birthday with John Wooden.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. That's great. What's the exact birthday? I don't remember for sure.
October 14th.
Oh, okay. Hey, Libra, just like me, October 22nd. Yeah. Very nice. So, Coach, at this time, we're going to throw out a quote from John Wooden, the John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. I'll read off the quote. I'll give you a bit to kind of mull it over and kind of get your reaction, and we'll kind of chop it up a little bit. So how's that sound, Jory? All right. From page 99 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. It's so easy to relax, to cut corners, to let down after you've reached your goal and begin thinking you can just turn it on automatically without proper preparation. It takes real character to keep working as hard or even harder once you're there.
Yeah. You know what? I had this book when I was a student assistant at Emporia, Marty.
Yep.
And we used to do this thing where we had prized possessions and you would talk about them. And that was back in the day when I read a lot. I still read some, but not near as much as I did. And I highlighted that book all over the place. I obviously remember that quote. I have it in my bookshelf right here on my desk, actually. You know, that particular quote to me is a lot about complacency. And it is. It's easy to, once you've done something well, to take a deep breath and relax. And to me, that's when you get caught. Mm-hmm. That's when other people are able to catch up to you. When you're able to work and continue to build and stretch yourself and separate yourself, the last thing you can do is let up. Or all the work you just did is all for naught, because you're going to get caught pretty quick. And, you know, that's something, you know, here, as we've gotten better, we're not anywhere near where we want to be, but we've gotten better. And all we're talking about, you know, for our team here at North Dakota State is what's the next step? Mm-hmm. How are we going to go from 21 wins, 22 wins to 25 or 26 wins?
Yeah.
What does that look like? What's that look like in practice? What's the difference between 22 win team and a 26 win team in the weight room, in our summer workouts? What do those things look like? And you just, you know, I'll let up when I retire.
Yeah.
That's when I'll take a break and take a deep breath and, you know, trying to instill that into young people, is a challenge, but, also really doable too.
It's taking that next step. You know, I don't want to say it's easy, because it's not easy, but it's a lot easier in my experiences to go from 10 wins to 20 wins than it is to go from 22 to 25. You can close that gap in a lot of ways with that 10 win improvement than you can in that 3-win improvement to go from very good to excellent to great, because it's just that next level and taking that step. And it's, you know, it sounds like that's what you're trying to instill in your kids.
Yeah. And I would agree with you 100%. And I don't know if this is a great analogy or not, but you know, it's like somebody that's overweight, that has 100 pounds to lose. You know, you can make some changes in your diet and your exercise, and you can probably lose 80 of that pretty quick.
Yeah.
A couple months, 2-3 months. It's the last 10, 15 where you're in pretty good shape. You're way better than you were, but that's where you have to redirect again, and you got to tighten it up again, and you got to tighten up your diet, and you got to work out, change your workout. And you're making those tweaks because, you know, the higher you get, you know, the less margin for error. Everybody else is, you know, you just have not as much leeway when you're playing at that level. And those are the jumps that, you know, we've been talking about here the last you know, 6 to 8 months, and especially the last three after our season this year.
Yep. Well, that's a great transition. Yeah, Jory, you act like you've done this before. You keep making these transitions so easy for me. Let's talk about some ways that you're doing that. Obviously, one of the things that coaches can control a little bit more so than some of the other events that happen out on the floor is the special situations, your baseline out of bounds plays on both sides of the ball. So what are you doing there to increase your productivity, to prevent the other team from scoring, to get a couple of extra cheap baskets a game off of your baseline out of bounds sets? What's kind of your philosophy on that on both sides of the ball, coach? I'm going to kind of try to shut up and let you roll here, let you cook. If I need to interrupt you, I will try to do so as politely as I can. So take us through your philosophy on baseline out of bounds plays.
Sure. So, you know, for me, I've always just thought, hey, this is a chance to have, you know, some people's philosophy is, hey, let's just get the ball in. We can run a little cross pick and a little whatever, and we'll get it in. If we don't have anything immediate, you know, we'll set up offense and go execute something else. I just always feel like, you know, these are chances and opportunities for you to score points. We're trying to get 6 points a game out of our out-of-bounds unders. And can we somehow steal, you know, 2 points here or there, or get a three here or there? And this is general, you know, not necessarily special situation, late clock, all those kind of things. We handle those a little differently.
Four minutes into the game, you got the ball underneath your own basket. Let's run something here. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, we're trying to get a basket.
It adds up. It adds up.
Exactly. You're trying to steal those, you know, throughout the game in several different ways. And we will usually have a variety of sets. You know, we'll have 3 to 4 plays out of a box set. We'll have 3 to 4 plays out of a 4-across set. We'll have 3 to 4 plays out of a triangle set. And each one of those, you know, obviously would have a different option, but I love having multiple options in each play. Especially where there's a mismatch or we expect a switch or we think we're going to be able to, you know, get a slip off an elevator screen in one way or the other. So, you know, we'll run things like if we're running one out of bounds. We'll run one and then a couple minutes later, we'll come back and maybe run 12. Well, that's one out of bounds, but that's a different option for the two. Mm-hmm. We'll run 14. And that's one out of bounds, and that's a different option for the four. And so within, you know, our 3 to 4 plays, we probably really have 12 to 15.
Yeah.
And those are just subtle, hey, instead of going here on the back screen, you're going to take 2 steps and back cut. And you know, those are things that we watch from the bench. We'll run one. How did they guard it? Okay, we come back to that in a minute. I'm going to call this part of that play. And obviously it doesn't work every time.
Yep.
But again, we're looking for, you know, you run what, 8, 10, 12 out of bounds plays a game sometimes. If you could score on 3 or 4 of those, I think that's a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And again, we'll have, you know, plenty of post ISOs out of those. We like our big kids, so we'll try to get the ball into them sometimes immediately. And then that's the play. But just, I think a variety of formations and a variety of options out of those makes it hard to guard. When I think about it defensively, you know, it's a pain in the butt to scout when a team is scoring on out of bounds plays and we're doing our scouts. I was like, hey, what do they got out of bounds? And they run 8 plays and they're pretty good at all of them. Well, how much time are we going to spend on that as we are preparing? You can't overdo your kids. And so you pick out, hey, these are the ones in our fundamentals here. These are the ones that might give us some trouble that we're going to have to communicate through. And then we practice those.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of look at it from both ways. You know, when we defend out of bounds plays, we usually take the person guarding the inbounder and plant them under the rim just to take away backside block, almost every time. And then that way we know which way we're helping. We're never going to help to the backside block. We're always going to have, if somebody's on a ball side block or elbow and they go to screen away, you can stay there and help. If you get screened to the backside, we never have to give help because we have that person planted there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to counter that, people try to get us on getting it back to the inbounder quick, which can be effective if we're not in a stance and ready to recover. But we kind of play at both sides there of just, you know, what do we not like to guard? What is hard for us? Well, let's do that to them. And at the same time, multiple options, I think, are just really hard to prepare for.
Yeah. How much of your system is it, you know, every year, you know, last year, this is number one, this year, number one is number one again. Or how much are you looking to tweak it from year to year, Coach?
So it changes every year. Mm-hmm. You know, I have some bread and butter ones that I just really like. That I think just actions that, you know, I think put you in peril defensively, especially with the ball under the basket. But that might be six this year, might be four the previous year. You know, we don't keep them the same. That way it's just harder to know. And our kids do fine picking all those up. I don't know that they remember any of them anyways after the season's over.
What do you mean? Number two? How am I supposed to remember that? It's been a week or two, Coach. What do you want? Coaches have really enjoyed the opening tip newsletter that has been coming out from a pen and a napkin here for almost a year now. Every 2 weeks, on the 1st and the 15th of every month, you're going to get a newsletter with an article, a podcast, an extra, a bonus podcast. You're going to get some coaching videos on there. You're going to get some book recommendations, a lot of different things that are coming out here with the opening tip newsletter. It's really driven towards a little bit more of a personal written form of what we do here at A Pen and a Napkin, which, of course, is to help coaches get better, to hone their craft. And so I use a lot of my own personal experiences. We use other people's personal experiences. We try to go into the lab with coaches. We try to get into the nuts and bolts, a little bit more of a visual compilation of things that we do here at A Pen and a Napkin. So if you haven't subscribed to the opening tip newsletter, you need to do so now. Go to Substack.com, find the opening tip newsletter and subscribe to it. Or if you find it on Twitter here, go to it, check it out, subscribe to it. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you to check out. So check out the opening tip newsletter on Substack from A Pen and a Napkin. Coach, one of the things that you said you would be willing to talk about here today, and it's something that when I was coaching, I was really passionate about, was transition offense, pushing the ball. It's good for your team, obviously. You're trying to get easy baskets. You're putting pressure on the defense. It's fun for people to watch. I think that's an underrated aspect of things, especially in women's basketball. The more up-tempo you are capable of playing, the more you're going to attract people to come and watch it. So what are you guys doing up there at North Dakota State when it comes to your transition offense and how you're trying to push the ball to move the ball up the floor?
Yeah, I think, you know, Maury, any kind of transition offense starts with what? You know, you got to get a stop.
Yep.
You know, you either forcing a turnover or we have a defensive philosophy of no threes, no layups, tough twos. And if you're forcing a lot of tough twos, I think you're in pretty good rebounding situation most of the time. And, you know, securing that ball, knowing where you're going with it. You know, I think there's multiple rules depending on, you know, who you have as players. I don't know that there's anybody playing fast in transition with bigs that can't run the floor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit been a priority for us in recruiting, is having mobile bigs that have the ability to rim run, that have the ability to play from the trail, whether that's to shoot it, drive it, and potentially just make decisions,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the ball in the middle of the floor immediately. We track our 8-second scores from the time we get a stop to the time that we can get fouled or get a basket in under 8 seconds. And so that's kind of a mentality we, you know, this first part of the summer here in June, we were pretty defensive minded, just trying to set the foundation defensively with our team. And when we get back here over the 4th, after the 4th, July will be almost all transition offense for us and what we're looking to do in the first few seconds of every possession. So we're pretty basic in the fact that, you know, we have a rim runner and a trail, and we're going to run both sides of the floor. We have some pretty versatile bigs that, you know, are able to be interchangeable, and who's rim running, who's trailing, same responsibilities and options and opportunities. I think anybody would tell you, hey, to throw ahead and throw it into the post is option number one, as much as possible, or throw it ahead and attack the basket, throw it ahead and shoot the transition three. Those are all green lighted opportunities, for our team. But I don't think any of that happens without the ability to get stops and get the ball outletted as fast as possible. Our ones, twos, and threes are almost always interchangeable. So if you get a defensive rebound as the two or the three, then, you know, you're pushing the ball in transition, and we're playing off that. If a four or five gets an outlet, it's dependent on who you are. Some of our fours, we let bring it up and push in transition. Some of them are designated, hey, you got to outlet the ball because we don't trust them yet. And once you get into the July here and we get the, you know, people figured out on what your strengths are, what your decision-making is, then people settle into, hey, what am I doing when I get a rebound? What am I doing when I'm not getting a rebound? We talk a lot about the first three steps. You know, if you're going to beat anybody offensively and defensively, when that ball has changed possession, it is put your head down and sprint your first three steps before you start locating, before you start, you know, checking out the situation and what the opportunities are going to be.
A couple of follow-ups here. When you're recruiting and looking for players to fit your system, and obviously it's a little bit different for you. You can't recruit exactly every kid that you want, but you can narrow it down a bit. You know, has it been easier the last few years with the evolution of AAU and skill development to have those bigs be more available to you, where they're not just, you know, a 6'1 back to the basket kid? You have a 6'1 kid that can dribble, pass, shoot a little bit more.
Yes, as we've gotten better, we've been able to recruit higher level, more versatile kids. Now, that's not to say, now I'm an old school guy too. I love a back to the basket, somebody that wants to bury people in the post and be able to gain position physically and score in and around the basket. We teach that just as much as anybody else, I think, in the country as well. You know, and we've had teams here the first couple of years here, we weren't that athletic. We weren't that fast. We had to be half court offensive execution team. And really be decisive on who was getting shots and how they were getting shots and where they were getting shots. As we've increased our talent level and athleticism and speed, we're able to play just a little bit more open, and let players make more decisions and let their athleticism play. And that's probably where, you know, this year will be as good as we've ever been. And just, hey, here's some general transition rules or guidelines to how we want to play and how we want to space the floor. But the mentality is going to be get the ball ahead as fast as we can. And let's be on the attack, you know, really, really early in the possessions.
My other follow-up, the 8 second scores, I love that. Do you have a goal each game? Like, we want to get X amount of these, or is it just something that you're emphasizing, or you know, maybe there's a little bit of both. What do you got there, coach?
Yeah, the goal is, you know, can we get at least 5 to 6 in under 8? And those are baskets. You know, we'll obviously, if you can get it outletted and you can get downhill and you can get fouled and you're at the free throw line immediately. One of the things we do, I think we're top 20, top 25 in the country in getting to the free throw line. Marty, we do a good job of throwing the ball inside. We do a good job of attacking the rim. I think anytime you're getting fouled a lot, then you're shooting the ball close to the basket. And that's obviously for us. We say, hey, if you get fouled, shooting fouls just as good as a basket. That's a positive possession. You know, that's efficient. We'll take those, you know, 80% free throw shooters all day long, getting some freebies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's we have some numbers there. We're trying to get 5 baskets in under 8 every game at minimum. And to add to that, you know, 3 to 4 more times of getting fouled. If you can get 10 possessions of positive offense super fast,
that's going to be good for you.
I think that's great. Yeah.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, it's the victory favors the team that gets the easiest shots generally. And if you can get those easy, and the easiest way to get easy shots is through transition, whether, and you have to decide to a degree, what identity do you want? Are we going to rebound and run? Are we going to pressure and trap and hopefully force turnovers that way? You know, those are the two basic ways, but you know, whatever way you decide to build your offensive identity, Jory, don't you think it's really important that here's how we're going to do it. Here's the structure like you were talking about, and here's what we're going to emphasize on a daily basis to make this happen.
100%. And it's, you know, everybody says they want to play fast. Everybody would like to play fast. I think that's a fun way to play when you're just getting out and playing. I think the emphasis is one thing. And one thing I learned a lot in coaching is just you are what you emphasize. Mm-hmm. And on a daily basis, how are you training transition offense? And so we'll do a ton of possessions when we play 5-on-5 of 15-second shot clock. And wait, you got to get it out, get it ahead. Yes, we're looking for under 8, but even after that, when we get through, you know, our transition actions and our what a lot of people would call some secondary break looks, what's happening immediately after that? And are we still staying on the attack? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you start playing with a 15-second shot clock in practice, that's a lot faster than it sounds like.
Yeah.
And you got to be, you know, your mentality is I'm looking for every opportunity to score or get the ball into the lane, you know, just as fast as we can every single time. And so that's where, again, we're in the summertime here and in the preseason, we're really just training those reactions and the mentality. But now that you have the athletes, it's, you know, what's our mindset? And so we're trying to hone that, you know, on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, to get that transition going, you've got a rebound, and to add a great way to add to getting to the free throw line is by hitting the offensive glass. So, Coach, let's bring this home here, talking about hitting the boards on both ends of the floor. What's your philosophy? How do you do things? You know, I'll let you cook here. I'll try to politely interrupt if I feel the need to. But just tell us about how you're building a presence on both ends of the floor with your rebounding.
Yeah, super passionate about rebounding. Maury, again, that's a stat. That's a thing where you can be great at it, even if you're not the most talented basketball player. It's a want to do. It's a mentality, and we stress it probably as much as anything. You know, I think this past year defensively, we were 27th in the country in offensive rebounds given up. And did a really good job of being a good box out team. We weren't quite as good offensively this year as we have been in the past. I'm pretty certain we'll get back to being a top 50 offensive rebounding team as well. But, you know, some people have different philosophies in their transition defense. Most of that is based on, you know, how aggressive are you in offensive rebounding? I feel like an offensive rebound and a putback is in the women's game is as much of a momentum play as, you know, a dunk is in the men's game.
Yep.
You know, there's some demoralizing plays that happen. Getting dunked on is one of them. Getting out rebounded and an offensive rebound in traffic and a putback and maybe an and one, you know, on your second or third attempt of the possession. I think those are that momentum plays for you offensively, and those are, you know, put your head in the dirt defensively when that happens to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, generally we will send 3 to the glass. We try to build a triangle, both blocks and what we call at the dots in the middle of the lane. Our on-ball pickup guy, whoever's our best pressure defender, is getting to the nail. So they're kind of there for tip outs and anybody that gets a deflection. And we encourage our bigs, hey, if you can't grab the rebound two hands to, you know, tip it out volleyball style towards the top of the key, and we're going to have our player there hunting that. And then we usually have one get back guy. Mm-hmm. So regardless of, you know, where they're at, you know, if the shot's on the left corner and you're in the right corner, you're the get back guy, you're putting your head down and protecting the rim initially.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have interchanging. If that proves a get back guy shoots it, that's recognition on the other, ball pickup player, the nail guy, and they'll change jobs there. But for the most part, we send three to the glass. And we encourage our players to give second effort, to spin off box outs, to set up, and just, you know, just like you're running back and you're trying to dodge, you know, a tackle, your swim move, spin, get off box outs, gain inside position. We talk a lot about where the ball's coming off when it's shot on the left wing, where's the percentages at, what position do you want to be in. And then we try to work and practice on reading the ball off the rim. You know, maybe the best rebounder ever in Dennis Rodman wasn't the biggest guy, you know, wasn't the most athletic guy, but he had such a feel for where the ball's coming and putting himself in the right spot. And I don't think you can teach that to everybody, but you can sure work on it and get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, defensively, you know, we're a five-person box out. Everybody's got to go touch their guy. One thing we do maybe slightly different than some other people is we allow our perimeter players especially to just face box out, to just go put a forearm in the chest of somebody on the perimeter and stop their momentum. You know, we hit split and then get butt to gut. You know, and then when you're in and around the basket, that's just a lower half competition to gain the leverage where you can separate and go reach it with two hands.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things we talk about almost on a daily basis. Those are things in film that are emphasized, and we'll watch box outs 1 through 5 over and over again in film and really, you know, get people doing their job every single time, regardless of if you don't think they're going or not. You know, you just being a box out player is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what else we do defensively. Our mindset is always, hey, you don't have to get the ball, but you can't
let your player
guy get the ball.
Yep.
Yeah. And if you got five people doing that, you know, we always, hey, we boxed out and this ball hit the ground. And we talk about that in practice. Can we box out long enough for it to get one bounce and then we go secure it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then offensively, it's just, hey, this is with your hair on fire. There's no real rules other than, hey, what direction do I think it's coming? And can I give more effort than the person across from me and go gain position?
Mm-hmm. Jory, you're stuck on a desert island with your team. The basketball gods have declared that you can only do one rebounding drill from here to the rest of eternity. What's it going to be?
Oh, man.
So I got a couple that I like that I'd have to...
The basketball gods only are going to allow you one, Jory.
One?
Yep, yep.
So we do a four-line rebounding drill. So we'll put four players in the lane, just on the midline, and they're labeled 1, 2, 3, and 4. We'll put four people outside the lane, a little bit outside the elbows, a little bit outside the block. And then a passer underneath the rim with the ball. And I'll yell, one. And then the passer will throw it to any of the four offensive players. And one has to go close out the ball. The other three players have to communicate and box out the other three, obviously at random a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we play it live from there.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll get up in 4-on-4 teams, usually 3 teams to 4, and you'll get out there and we'll go one. And one has to find the ball. The next time it may be three. Player three has to find the ball. The other three have to close out. So there's a little communication so you don't get 2-on-1.
Yep.
And leave somebody open. And then we play, and most of our rebounding drills like that, Marty, are no blood, no foul.
Yep.
I mean, it's a wrestling event, and we don't usually blow the whistle too much. We don't really play out of bounds too much. It's who's got the tenacity to go get the basketball.
Perfect. Perfect. Little Jimmy Superfly Snuka coming off the top rope. They're no, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So
I didn't hear this. Never heard anybody in good doses.
Jory Collins, head women's basketball coach at North Dakota State University. Coach, if folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how can they find out about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the best way is just go to our website. I'm an open book, so, you know, my email's on there. I'd be happy to talk to anybody about basketball or anything that they have questions about. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on here and talk some hoops and talk about our program. We're proud of what we're doing and who we're becoming, and looking forward to having a great year this year. But, yeah, our website is probably the best way.
Perfect, perfect. Coach, thanks so much for your time. I hope the first appearance on A Pen and a Napkin was relatively harmless.
It was great. Super easy. You do a great job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. If you could hold the line just a second here, just going to wrap up a couple things. Again, Jory Collins, head women's basketball coach, North Dakota State University, working their way up the Summit League standings and, you know, building that program back to where it once was. And they're going to be knocking on the door for an NCAA tournament here in the very near future. You just watch and wait. Want to thank Coach Collins. Want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle. Download, rate, review, subscribe to this, whether you're on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you're getting this from. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Buy a copy of Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School. That just came out, you know, this week, and it's a great read. It's a short read. It's 150 pages, but if you're a basketball guy, there's 50 pages worth of drills at the end of the book as well. So it's a basketball nerd's dream, if you will. So go check out Last of the Cowboys. I want to thank Coach Collins for his time. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.